This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is two-time Emmy Award-winning director, writer, and executive producer Eric Drath. His latest documentary will air on Showtime December 4th at 9 p.m. It's Macho, the Hector Camacho story. It's the inspiring and tragic story of one of boxing's all-time greatest fighters and showmen.
He was a tremendous fighter, tremendous talent.
It's just truly amazing.
He was a pioneer.
Are you going to wear the same thing into the ring again? Come on, man. Never the same thing.
But boxing sometimes can be too damn Shakespearean. It's got its beautiful stories, but it's got its share of sad ones, too.
The tough words from boxing trainer and commentator Teddy Atlas as part of the documentary Macho, the Hector Camacho story on Showtime. And the director and narrator of this brilliant documentary is indeed our guest, Eric Drath. Great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Doug. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've already wowed us with such projects like your first documentary, Assault in the Ring on HBO, amazing film Renee, the story of transsexual tennis player Renee Richards, and No Moss, about the Roberto Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard boxing match and the controversial ending back in the 1980s. Eric, this is what I think about you and your work. Eric is a terrific and honest storyteller who gets tremendous access to his subjects and takes us on emotional and gripping journeys. Couple that with his news background, and Eric also brings us purpose, insight, perspective, relevancy, and of course, entertainment to his viewers. Does that pretty much sum up what you do?
Well, I don't think I'm going to make anything in the future because I'll stop at that. Thank you, Doug. That's so nice of you. And I like to believe that that's all true. And I really am concerned with what I do to the extent that it touches people, that it's based in truth, and that, you know, I like to tell human stories. You know, they happen to be mostly in the sports world, but it's the human element that attracts me to the stories that I tell.
Certainly is the case with this project. Let's start off with the access part in Macho, the Hector Camacho story. You graduated from Columbia University and worked for ABC News, CNN, Fox News Channel, and then ventured into the controversial boxing world and became an agent representing more than 40 fighters around the world. But why did Hector's mom, Maria, and his sisters and even son trust you with the one being the person who would tell this beloved boxer story?
Well, it's a great question because really when you make these stories, as you laid out, access is so important. You know, a network doesn't need me to tell the Hector Camacho story because, you know, it's out there in the news clips. What they need someone like me to do is to get underneath and get that access and spend those hours and hours with the family, you know, filming and almost and being embedded to a certain extent with the family. And that's what I love to do. But the way it started with the family is, you know, because I worked in the boxing world, and the boxing world is it's a marvelous fraternity, if you will. It's a very small industry. I've been in foreign countries like Poland in a little town called Lodz. Lodz is the way they pronounce it, spelled L-O-D-Z, and seen people from the boxing world from New Jersey. You know, it's this small community that once you're in for life. And because I had the opportunity to work with one of the executive producers, Mike Akery, he's one of the quiet giants of boxing. People outside of boxing don't know his name. He actually was the promoter of Roberto Duran, Hector Camacho, and did a lot of big shows. He's from Erie, Pennsylvania. But he and I, and he's one of my longtime mentors and friends in the business, he was able to originally connect me with Hector, with Hector's family. But I knew Hector Jr. from working in the sport. I had also met Hector Sr. covering for Fox the Leonard fight in 97. So there was a connection already with the family. And there was a trust level because of Mike Akery, and he had really served the Camacho family very well for many years. And that's how they trusted me. And they had seen my other work, and they knew that, you know, I was what they saw as what I am. And I just wanted to find out, you know, more information about the murder. And that's how I started this project. It was really to get to the bottom of this unsolved murder. And then when I, you know, really got the chance to spend time with Maria, Camacho's mom, who really embodies the spirit of Camacho. If you want to see where Camacho got his charisma, you'll see it through Maria. And I saw a woman and a family still seeking closure. And that's really what drew me to the story and gave me a purpose to go back and put ourselves in harm's way many times down in Puerto Rico, because there was a bigger purpose than just telling his story. Is about finding out the truth.
Yeah, one of the opening segments, a beautiful embrace as you get to the door there with Maria, really shows you that, you know, you have that closeness and that she has great respect for you telling the story. You know, I also love the fact that you're the narrator of the documentary as well. It brings a realness to Macho's story. And with the writing of award-winning Aaron Cohen, a former guest here on Sports Jam, you invite us into this fascinating and flashy, fast-paced, but very dangerous world of Hector Camacho.
Yeah, you know, it's always a little bit, you know, I haven't narrated all my films, but the personal ones, I find it's easier to tell the story. I want to take the viewer on my ride. And I want them to feel comfortable with a voice that can kind of steer them through, instead of just, you know, a big bellowing Liev Schreiber, who, by the way, has one of the best voices out there and is a wonderful actor and voice. But I feel like when I tell the story, it kind of, you know, it's what I'm seeing. It's what I'm experiencing. But there's always that feeling like, you know, I only want to do it if there's a reason to do it. You know, other projects like No Mas, there was no reason for me to tell the story. And so I stepped out and let the story be told by the people I interviewed.
It works out really well because, once again, you said you started this project out trying to find out more about the murder. Hector Camacho was killed in 2012. He was shot in Puerto Rico. How did a Puerto Rican-born kid who grew up in Spanish Harlem become a Bruce Lee fan who always wanted to fight or at least mix it up with kids?
It's unbelievable. I mean, you know, it's a 1 in 10 million story, or a once in a lifetime story. I don't know if anybody's ever done it from, you know, the projects of Spanish Harlem, you know, and it's not just the world-class ability he had. It was the showmanship and that quality of charisma that he exuded and had. And you know, that combination doesn't come around very often. But you could have all the talent in the world and be from the projects and still not get to where he got. So it was a combination of really hard work. I mean, he worked really, really hard from a young age, and he realized that boxing was going to be his way out. And he never rested on his laurels. And I think that's something so important. And he was really, as Lou DiBella, who's another executive producer of the film, you know, when I was originally talking to Lou, we were going through some Puerto Rican boxers, and, you know, there was Cotto, Trinidad, Vasquez, you know, either Calderon. There were so many great fighters, Puerto Rican fighters. And I don't know that Camacho was really the best, but what he was, as Lou DiBella said, he was the hero of their streets. He had flaws. He had human traits that really made him identifiable. And I think that's what makes a great character, a great hero, like a Marvel hero. You know, the DC comic heroes are Superman and Batman, and they're perfect off the, without the costume and with the costume. But the Marvel superheroes are more relatable because they're not perfect. they have these superheroes, but yet they have these human characteristics that really make them likable. And somebody can watch and say, yeah, I've made that mistake too. And that's what makes him kind of human, but I can't do what he can do in the ring. So I think that's why he's hero of the streets. He was really loved because people understood that he wasn't perfect.
In 2000, you created LiveStar Entertainment, a full service production company that specializes in live sports, concerts, award shows, original content, including documentaries. But you just talked about the superheroes. It was your, you know, one-on-one origins, a wonderful film that uses animation and interviews the beginnings of the closest thing we have to superhuman athletes, the professional athletes and the superheroes. So who would you pick? I know Hector kind of says you put them all in together in the film and you can't beat me, but who would you connect superhero qualities to Macho Camacho?
You know, the speed, you know, maybe the Flash, because those legs, I mean, it was a thing of beauty to watch those legs. I mean, you know, he had beautiful, you know, footwork and he could just move. And, you know, that same quality and super attribute also is why a lot of fans didn't like him. In the boxing world, boxing fans want you to go mano a mano, toe to toe, Duran style, Chavez style. And, you know, there was a defining fight in Camacho's career in 1986 with Rosario when he got walloped and he almost went down and he made it through. But it was that moment that seems to have, you know, been the catalyst for a change in his style. And he realized, you know, I'm going to stay on the outside. I'm going to be more of a defensive fighter. He definitely could bring it, but he was more of a defensive fighter. And boxing fans don't love defensive fighters. I mean, Mayweather, as you know, he's a great personality or a personality. I'm not going to say great. You know, he's a personality and has a flawless record and is a superior athlete, but his style is boring. You know, he, you know, obviously he knocked me out, but he's not a knockout artist, you know, and boxing fans don't like that, especially Latino fans. Latino fans, they want Macho to be Macho. And this Macho was Macho in a different way. You know, he wasn't necessarily a slugger. You know, there were some funny stories that his wife Amy told me about, you know, how he was so authentic with the costumes he wore that, you know, one time they went to a shoe store and he saw some shoes and he points them out. He's like, look, Amy, I love those. And the salesperson comes over and goes, oh, those are women's shoes. He goes, oh, okay. And they walk outside of the store and he gives Amy $100. He says, go back and get me those in size 10. You know, that's who he was, you know. You know, he wore his fishnet outside. He didn't, you know, wear it in dark shadows.
You're listening to Sports Jam. And one of the specialties of my guest, two-time Emmy Award-winning director, writer, and executive producer, Eric Drath, is to get the inside scoop on his subjects, something he did so well in Macho, the Hector Camacho story, airing exclusively on December 4th at 9 p.m. on Showtime.
Came from Puerto Rico straight to New York. I was 5, Hector was 4. We were close brothers and sisters, racing in the projects. We used to do a lot of crazy things in the house, play around, play karate. That was Macho's favorite, karate, because Bruce Lee was his idol. We used to break my mother's broom and mop to make moonshot, you know, karate. We didn't have no broom, because that's what he used to do. He liked it, he likes to fight. That was his stuff. I used to like to fight.
People used to call me Little Man around the street. I was always looking for excitement to fight and always in the boys' club trying to beat on bigger kids, you know, just to get a reputation of a fighter.
I always saw him after school because he always had a fight after school. There was somebody that was getting beat up at 3 o'clock in the school parking lot.
Weren't you expelled from school like a couple times?
I was expelled. Expelled is not the word. I was thrown out. I was thrown out of 6 schools. I was I visited 6 psychiatrists, and they never found nothing crazy in me.
Hector drove us crazy. Hector was a smaller kid. I remember an incident. One of the other 7th graders, who was a bigger kid, made the mistake of wanting to take him on.
Eric, I know you're a Mets fan, and me being from the Pittsburgh area, I have to ask you about the great Pirates player Roberto Clemente, who is a legend from Puerto Rico. Did Hector Camacho ever say anything about the great Roberto?
It didn't really come up, no. I know he liked Tito Fuente, the singer, and Hector Lavoe was his favorite salsa singer. But no, he didn't say any. I didn't hear ever anything about his love for baseball or anything.
So speaking of this underdog, were you an underdog growing up in New York City?
100%. My life is defined by being an underdog. And I think everybody needs to, at one point or another, go through some kind of obstacle where somebody doesn't believe in them. Something happens where, they have some kind of obstacle that they need to overcome in order to succeed. And I had that in my life. And that's what's driven me, this feeling of, maybe that I'm not as good and that I need to prove. And I think that helps a lot of people in this world.
Did you need Emmys to prove, though, that you could do this so well? Because, you've been doing it for a long time now, Eric. Eric Drath is our guest here on Sports Jam. Did you need hardware to prove that? I mean, it was your first documentary that you got an Emmy Award for.
Hey, the first one was just dumbfounding. I had no idea. I didn't even know what I was doing. I mean, me and the executive producer and partner in it, Barry Murphy, were like, let's do this documentary. I heard about the story. I met Resto. People were saying he was in jail. He was, banned from the sport. I was like, let's make this. And we made this documentary. We get a DVD. We give it to a friend of mine who winds up getting the rough cut to a parent on the sideline of a high school women's lacrosse game in Westchester to an HBO executive who watches it, loves it. The film gets made. They helped me finish it. They helped structure it a little bit better than it was. And we go to the Emmys, and I was like, well, we were nominated. And I was like, oh, that's great, nominated. And somebody said, you better say that a lot before the Emmy, because you're nominated, it's a great thing. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And we get there, and I was sure that we had no chance. And when they said, called Assault in the Ring, it was just, I almost fell out of my seat. And it took the pressure off a little bit, winning it the first time. But it was a surreal moment, and one I'll never forget. But it also makes me want to do it again. And it makes me want to, make programs that not just the public likes, that my peers in the industry, appreciate and applaud.
You have boxing analysts, you have announcers and fellow boxers talk about Hector in this documentary. What was the first time, your kind of first reaction to you seeing Hector Macho Camacho?
Well, I remember seeing him as a kid. I wasn't a huge boxing fan. I mean, even when I got into the sport, it was more for everything around the sport than the actual sport itself. I mean, some people call it like boxing porn. Like, the actual boxing, it's good. But I like the characters. I like the storylines. I like the hoochie mama outfits and the cigars. My first fight was in a field house in Yonkers Raceway, where they just put up some temporary bleachers. So that's what's always attracted me to this sport. But when I was a kid, I did see him, and I remember seeing him and kind of wanting him to lose. And I think that's the formula for a fighter that gets out there. He's got to be part bad guy, part good guy. Half the fans used to want Tyson to lose. They want Mayweather to get knocked out. Somebody shut Camacho up. So I thought he was like really exciting. And I loved, HBO did some great stories on him when he was rising. And of course I was brought up in New York City, and I remember actually seeing him once on 86th Street and 3rd Avenue in a Ferrari in front of the Lowe's movie theater and being like, wow, he was really out there.
I'm going to let people make sure that they watch the documentary, which will be on Showtime. And that moment in the ring with announcer Tim Ryan, where he breaks down, is really powerful. You've captured some amazing moments, and you talked to Tim in your story. Hector Camacho's troubled life with drugs came to an end in 2012, as I mentioned, when the 50-year-old was shot in Puerto Rico a crime that I get a sense that you are still so frustrated that hasn't really been solved, or at least no one's been arrested yet.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those murders that really should have been solved. I mean, you know, there was a chase, you know, a police chase. They chased the suspects into a like what we'd probably call projects, like an apartment complex. And there's no covering for cars. There's no garages, and yet they lost the car. You know, how does that happen? Then when they went to go get the car, they finally found the car. It was a Jeep. By the time they got there, it had been moved. You know, and you're dealing in a community it's a no snitch community. And that's, you know, and it's dangerous. And anybody who talks to the police, you know, is a target. You know, and there's really bad people down there. This is not like some imagined danger. It is very, very dangerous in Puerto Rico now. And only 1/3 of all murders get solved. And they have the second biggest police force in all of the United States and its territory, second only to New York City. So they have the resources, they have the manpower. And as Lou DiBella coined it, you know, with the hero of the streets, if Puerto Rico can't solve the murder of their hero of the streets, then whose murder can they solve?
It's powerful stuff when we're talking about the drug addiction and the story that I'll let, you know, viewers watch. But wait till you see what happens when one day Hector and his bodyguard get to the border after the bodyguard sleeps a little bit. That is another powerful scene to show you really what addiction is all about. What does "It's Macho Time" mean to Eric Drath?
You know, it's funny because it's said so many times throughout the movie, and it really was his mantra, "Macho Time," and it was his time. You know, there was a moment in 1986 where it was macho time. He was on the top of the sport. You know, I actually bought the original Rosario poster from 1986 where he fought June 13, 1986. And there's a beautiful image of Camacho. Chavez is on the card. And you know who else is on the undercard? Not only is Chavez on the undercard, Mike Tyson's on the undercard.
Is that right?
It really says something about macho time. That was macho time. And it's almost like saying it to almost like we're going to be back at macho time. So that's what it means to me. It means it was a time when he was on the top of the sport.
Well, I have to ask you real quickly about Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. fight that we just witnessed. Not bad for two old fighters, huh?
I'm going to say I really enjoyed it. I thought the whole thing was great. I thought, you know, the production was fun. It was lighthearted, you know, having Snoop Dogg as a commentator. I mean, I'm not even into the music that much, and the music wasn't horrible. I my hat's off to them. I think the producers did a good job. I think Tyson and Roy Jones were authentic. They were who they are. And it's kind of a sad commentary on the sport that's the biggest fight of the year. You know, I think that the pay-per-view numbers are probably through the roof. You know, I had, you know, guys at the pizza shop saying, "Oh, who do you like in the fight?" You know, anytime everybody's talking about a fight, that means that it's not just boxing fans. That was a big sporting event. And I bet you they're going to do it again, whether it's Roy Jones and Tyson again. I just read this morning that Lennox Lewis is now thinking about, he watched it and he wants to come back. And now maybe boxing will have its own senior tour.
I was really interested in it because Mike Tyson was a guest on Sports Jam when he was doing his Undisputed Truth Tour. And I saw Roy Jones Jr. play in the United States Basketball League in Asbury Park when he was keeping in shape. So I was interested in seeing what would happen and surprised by as many were on just how great a shape, first of all, Tyson was in, but the fight itself. Speaking of that, you know, some boxing handlers and promoters have been constantly accused of running the lives of boxers like Mike Tyson. Have some of the best ones on the canvas now learned, you think, from others' mistakes? Because you make, you know, very much a reference here that the handlers weren't what the family wanted when it came to Don King and people like that running the life of Hector Camacho.
Well, You know, I think just endemic in sports, you know, you got guys always taking advantage of athletes. You know, athletes, a lot of times, you know, because of the way they're coddled and brought up through, you know, the academic process, you know, people don't give people look the other way when it comes to testing, and they want, you know, if you got good athleticism, you're going to get right through, you know, school, and especially in boxing, where you don't need to go to school. You don't need to go to college. You don't even need to go to high school or elementary school. You just need to be a good fighter. So people are always going to take advantage of guys with no education, you know, with guys who come from such humble beginnings. You know, and there's extreme stories, as you know, about this, and another project I'm working on now really kind of delves into that. I think some have learned, but I mean, the statistics out there are still like, you know, even NBA players, I think they have like 3 to 5 years after they finish, you know, are usually broke, you know, a large percentage of them. So, and there was a good documentary on ESPN called Broke that kind of goes into that. So I think, yes, there are some that have learned. Mayweather has a successful promotion company. De La Hoya has a promotional company. Dimitri Salida, who is a fighter, has a successful promotional company. But there are still the majority of them will wind up broke not soon after they retire.
Eric, Hector Camacho eventually fought so many of the greats, including Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Julio Cesar Chavez, late in his career. So I'm going to put you in the shoes of a promoter right now. And everybody in their heyday, who would you like to see Macho Camacho go up against when both fighters would be in their prime?
I actually would like to see Mayweather Camacho. And actually, Teddy Atlas said that he thought Mayweather, in a mythical matchup, that Camacho would win. That would be an interesting fight. They're both defensive fighters. But I kind of feel like Camacho might edge him out too. I'd love to see that fight because, you know, and I'd put him in a small ring.
You know, I love the personal touch of your documentaries. And when you bring the priest in after he had said when he was a child, he was a disaster as a student. He couldn't keep him in school. And then he gives the homily during the funeral. It really kind of brings it all back on what he meant to that community, what he meant to Spanish Harlem, what he meant to his family. And so much that even the priest there who was running the school had, you know, so much respect for him and what he meant to the community.
That is such a funny, like, coincidence or whatever you want to believe. You know, the film gods shined on us. We were actually in the South Bronx doing another shoot with a friend of Camacho's who actually didn't wind up making the film, but was an important part of his entourage. So we felt we'd reach out to him. And I went into this big church right next door to actually use the bathroom. And then when I saw it, I said, you know, it was so loud outside. I said, you know, can we shoot something right in your lobby, you know, in the entryway? And they said, oh, well, we have to ask the father, you know, the priest. So they went back in and the priest comes out. He goes, oh yeah, I actually knew Hector and the family. I said, you did? He goes, yeah, I actually did the homily. I said, you did? I was like, and so we're like, I said, do you mind if we can talk to you? He goes, well, I'm going to have lunch, but you can talk to me afterwards. And that's how that interview happened. You know, when you're making these documentaries, sometimes you just step into it. You know, I've got other stories like that, making films where, you know, we thought it was horrible. We came back and like, this is the worst kind of film we've ever made. And then realized it was gold. So you just never know. But he was extraordinary. And he is a part of that community. And we're so happy that he's part of the film.
We know that there's triumph and tragedy in the life of Hector Macho Camacho. And you touch upon it all through your documentary. But at the end, there's still that emptiness that this crime has not been solved, even though word got to Maria, his mom, that they knew who did it. So the relationship that you built with Maria and the family, has it continued beyond this documentary?
in fact, just yesterday, we showed them the documentary for the first time. And so, you know, that's always a little nail biting, you know, you're like, oh, are they going to, you know, and I looked over a couple of times and she was smiling and I looked over a couple of times and she had a tissue, you know, wiping off a tear. All the subjects that I've ever worked with, including Pete Rose and Renee Richards and, you know, even Panama Lewis, who, you know, recently passed away. There's a kinship that you make. There's a bond that you make after filming with these people, and they become part of this piece of work that lives on beyond all of our lives. It's like a book or a piece of art. It continues to go on. And that connection with the family, with the Camachos, I believe will be forever. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, I used to kid like, you know, what kind of Thanksgiving table I could have if I brought all the guests, including, you know, former Panamanian strongman Noriega, who I shot with, and Don King, and all the people that I filmed with, you know, and that's part of the fun of this business that both of us are in, you know.
A lot of people might not even realize that he was the WBC super featherweight champion from 83 to 84. WBC lightweight title champion from 85 to 87, and the WBO junior welterweight champion from 89 to 92. The little one, 5 foot six and a half, and becomes this huge champion of the people and the Flash. When you have a chance to look back on all of this, how do you sum up Macho in your mind? If somebody comes up to you and hasn't seen your amazing documentary, and they say, I only got a couple of minutes here, Eric, who was this guy?
Well, you know, he was like all people, a little bit of a lot of things. But ultimately, he was a showman who happened to use boxing to express himself, as opposed to a boxer who, wanted to be a showman. He was a showman. He had that personality. He had that je ne sais quoi. He wanted to entertain. He wanted to please. He was happy when you were laughing at what he was saying and that he had made you feel good. So he used boxing as an opportunity to get there. But no doubt at all, he had unbelievable super talent, once in a lifetime talent. And, you know, even though he was 5'6", if you look at those legs, like I said, you'll see the power.
It's only about 3 seconds or 5 seconds of your documentary, Macho, the Hector Camacho story that will be on Showtime on December 4th. But it sums up everything. Is the risk worth it? And he said, yes. To me, that sums up fame. It sums up why these professional athletes will put their life on the line, football players knowing their careers could end up with concussions or much worse. It shows you that, yeah, for him, it was worth all of what took place.
Yeah, you know, and I got to take my hats off to Alistair, Sherman, our editor who found that bite, you know, and did, you know, an unbelievable job finding those diamonds in the rough of so much file footage. But you're right, that encapsulates, you know, his attitude. So, and it also softens the blow a little bit, you know, now that, you know, he was murdered, you know, two hitmen, you know, took him and his friend out. And the murder's still unsolved, and yet you can rest a little bit knowing that he himself said it's worth it. It was worth all of it, you know, because he could never get the streets out of his life. He wasn't one of those guys that, like, you know, grew out of his lifestyle or grew out of the streets or ever became too big to be the everyman. He was never too big to shake everybody's hand. He wanted to be part of the community. He was always part of the streets, and that's where he lived and that's where he loved, and he loved to be there. So I think that's a great point that you pull that out, that, you know, you can kind of feel okay at the end of the film knowing that he knew what he was getting himself into.
Just have a few more seconds here on Sports Jam, so I want to give you an opportunity to talk about some upcoming projects.
Sure, sure. Well, and I do want to say that working with Showtime was such a pleasure. They really gave us the latitude to make the film that we made. I made a whole nother film that was all about the investigation. And by the time I was done with it, and it was really good, I was like, well, where's Camacho? How do I get to Mancini from there? So, you know, Showtime was just really, really patient, and they really care about their boxing audience. You know, I really think that they're the best network for boxing audience, for the boxing fans out there. Yeah, ESPN puts on good fights, but Showtime really cares about their audience and wants to build these stories. We're working on a couple of things right now, one of which is almost ready. It's a civil rights era story about legendary Nick Dick Barnett and his quest to get inducted, his whole TSU team inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. It's a much bigger story than that. It really weaves through the hardships that the team played, and it's got a contemporary angle about his life and his persistence today. I started shooting it in 2011, and we're just wrapping it up and editing it now.
Can't wait to see that, Dick Barnett. I would play puff basketball in the basement of my home, being all the Knicks with Frazier and Monroe and DeBuscher and Bradley and Phil Jackson and Willis Reed and, yes, Dick Barnett. I was all of them downstairs, shooting either left-handed or right-handed, depending on what the players would be. We look forward to that coming up. You know, and I have to mention, too, Renee was one of my favorites, too. It was just a powerful, powerful show. So I want to thank you for being a guest here on Sports Jam and wish you continued success, Eric.
Thank you so much, Doug. This was a true pleasure. I'm a big fan of you and your station.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the podcasts by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam. Find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes or on the NPR list of podcasts. Until our next Sports Jam session, hopefully I'll see you at the game. Thank you.